The Inside Transportation Podcast is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their corporate efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com, a newsletter company. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm the writer of the Inside Transportation and Inside Electric Vehicles newsletters. And I'm joined here by my co-host, angel investor, podcaster, the owner of the 16th Tesla Roadster ever produced, and Inside.com CEO, Jason Calcanis.
It's great to be back. And you left out also the owner of the Tesla Model S serial number signature 0000001. So I have two classic Teslas.
Yes.
In my garage that I don't drive anymore, which is causing quite a problem because I want to get my fifth Tesla and there's no room for it. I got to figure out, maybe our guest today can tell me what I should do with these collector's items.
Yeah. Are you thinking about getting a Model Y by chance?
I'm thinking about, and that's why I wanted to have our very, very special guest, somebody I'm obsessed with on the YouTube, on the program today, is because I want to know, because he's been ripping apart a Model Y. I want to know if I should take my mod. I have one of the founder series of the Model 3s, which I love. Just had the computer upgraded, and I'm looking forward to going for a drive today because I understand we could stop at red lights now automatically. But yeah, I'm thinking about going to the Model Y, but I want the Model Y with the third row of seats, right? That's just critical. In my Model S, I have the jump seats in the back, which were like a very niche product that only existed, I think, with Tesla and maybe station wagons from the 70s, my childhood, but rear facing seats for kids, which people look at me when I put my kids in those seats and they think it's like some act of child abuse to put your kids in that seat. They love it. Just like I love being in a station wagon, but I guess people think it's like incredibly dangerous, like the equivalent of putting your kids in the trunk of the car.
Yeah. Well, like you were kind of mentioning, we, from time to time on the podcast, we feature guests that are helping with the progress and evolution of the automotive industry. And today we have the pleasure of speaking with Sandy Monroe, engineer and CEO of Monroe & Associates. Just a little intro here. Sandy is a frequent speaker and advisor to some of the world's top executives on implementing change and innovative development strategies. Monroe has over 40 years of experience cutting across virtually every segment of the manufacturing industry. He's worked with Barbie, he's worked with the space station, and he's recently done a very impressive analysis of the Model Y crossover that Tesla just released. So I'd like to welcome Sandy Monroe here on the Inside Transportation Podcast. How's it going, Sandy?
It's going well. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, of course.
And when we say, Johan, that we invite people, this is actually our first guest, right? It's the first time we've had somebody on.
Yeah, Sandy, you have the honor of being the first ever guest on the Inside Transportation Podcast.
Wow, does this mean that you're going to give me one of those first cars?
Absolutely.
That Jason?
Absolutely, you just take one of them. Yeah. You know, Sandy, I got introduced to your videos because, you know, I go down the rabbit hole on, you know, the Tesla topic. Obviously, I'm a super fan. I own four of the cars, four of the five models available. The only car I don't have yet is the Y, but my semi is on order, so I should get my semi truck any day now. But I somehow ran into your videos, and you're super compelling on YouTube, ripping apart cars and explaining it. And I had to like work backwards because I'm not in the industry of understanding who you were or what you do. But from what I can tell, you buy a car, you rip it apart and look at all the different parts in it, put it in a giant binder and explain it to other people, and then sell that essentially a breakdown of the car so that I guess other competitors or people who are interested in industry analysis don't have to do that. So you can rip apart one car as opposed to everybody ripping apart their own car. Is that right? Am I inferring correctly what you do for a living?
Plus, we also give analysis on different materials that are used inside the vehicles. And we also do the costing. It's a much broader range of services than other people take cars apart and take pictures and hand them off. But what we do is, like I say, we analyze the product from an engineering standpoint, and then we also do the costing, and we have some trick software that allows us to predict what the quality levels are, right down to actually even each nut and bolt that might be put in place. So it's a unique process. And we have quite a few different customers. Most of them are interested in the quality levels and the costing. How much does it cost?
And when you how many of these cars have you taken apart at Monroe Associates?
Hundreds.
And so every week a different car comes in and you just put it up on the lift and start taking it apart. That is literally the process of understanding how it's built.
Well, it isn't every week, but we do about 30 cars a year, 25 to 30 cars a year. And most of them are a cursory look. In other words, we're going in and we'll only look at certain aspects. Maybe one vehicle's got something that's interesting as far as powertrain, another one, maybe it's suspension, or there's some new seat feature or whatever. The cars come completely to pieces, but then we focus our attentions on the things that are unique. We call it eye-catching features, and those features then become the strong points in our analysis and in our reports. So
Sandy, how did you get into this line of work? Why don't we go back a little bit? And, you know, because I had heard you work in many different industries, right? Not just automotive. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background?
Okay, so I'll start way at the back. Okay, so I grew up on a farm and hated it. And then my dad didn't like the fact that his boys were sitting at home doing nothing. So at 16, I went into the trade. I was an apprentice toolmaker. I became a toolmaker, and then I got sucked into going back to school and becoming an engineer. Then I went back to the industry I came from, which was machine tools and automation, so robotics and things like that, chip cutting equipment. And I was the engineering vice president at a company called Valiant Machine Tool, which was a big place. And then Ford came along and gave me an offer I couldn't refuse. So I went to work for Ford. I started out as just an engineer. Like when I was at Valiant, I had 100 people that were under me. But when I went to Ford, it was just me, and I liked it. It was good. No responsibilities for people. It worked out fine. But at Ford, it was during some really rough times for Ford Motor Company. And because I'd come from the machine tool industry and I knew automation cold, I could make little changes that made a big difference in the assembly lines. And so at engine division, that's where I was, where I started. So anyway, one thing led to another, and I got promoted out of the factory that I started in, and then as a manufacturing engineer. And then I went to engine division staff at Ford and Dearborn. And then I went to a bunch of different places and ended up at world headquarters in finance staff. So I was there for a while, but I'm not very good at politics. And there's lots of stories on that. But anyway, I wound up leaving Ford Motor Company and starting my own company at the behest of a fellow by the name of Dr. Edwards Deming. And Dr. Deming and I got along very, very well, and he was the one who convinced me to quit Ford. And when I got started, Dr. Deming was very big on factory floor improvements, improving quality and things like that. He was also very, very good at dressing down executives. He had very little use for executives that, as he put it, played the game, but didn't really have the best intentions for the company. And so I learned a lot from him in that respect. And when we were doing conferences or something together, he would start out saying that all poor quality stems from variation, and then he would put his hand out and I would say all variation stems from design. So I would be telling my little story about how we could improve quality and improve the build of products and reduce costs and whatnot if we paid attention at the design phase. And so when I left Ford, I had been nominated for a bunch of awards and whatnot. And those things that we had created at Ford, the changes and whatnot that we made at Ford, really turned the company around. Between Dr. Deming, well, it was definitely Dr. Deming that turned around the quality aspect, but it opened the eyes and ears of the people who are left that maybe we can do even better if we attack the product designs. And in actuality, we had lots of successes. And that's kind of how I got going. Was I went from company to company looking at product designs, and I had a really bad taste in my mouth for automotive. So when I got out, I worked on all kinds of things, printers, copy machines, bulldozers and things like that for John Deere. And then ultimately I got into the aircraft industry. So I worked with, it used to be a bunch of different companies, but they're all soaked up into Boeing by now. So, and we were quite successful doing that. And then sooner or later we got back into automotive, and mostly through Chrysler. Chrysler has been a very good customer of ours for at least two bankruptcies, takeovers, I should say. They didn't get bankrupt. Chrysler never got bankrupt. It was the takeovers and whatnot from other folks.
So Sandy, based on that, you know, and like what I'm hearing about, like, this low tolerance for nonsense, I get that sense that when you're talking in these videos, and I don't know if you've had media training or anything like that, but you seem very, no media training, just very matter of fact. You take it right down the middle. And there were things you were super critical about with some of the early Teslas. And then I was watching the Y video and you were getting very excited. Like, it seemed like, you know, on the Sandy Monroe, you know, spectrum of like really thrilled to like perturbed, you were really excited about some of the things on the undercarriage of the Model Y. And I was wondering if you could tell us, just in context, how much better is the Model Y and the manufacturing process than, you know, the average competitor, like a Prius, or I don't know what would be the category competitor in the ICE, you know, sort of space or the hybrid space. And then what is so unique about this sort of manufacturing acceleration we're seeing with Tesla and how much better they're getting at it?
Okay, well, that's a whole bunch of questions. So let me try and answer them all.
Yeah.
I'm old. I don't give a rat's ass. If somebody wants to try and buy my favor, it doesn't happen. I don't do that. My job as an engineer here at Monroe is to tell the truth with no exceptions, no sugar coating. I mean, there's tons of consulting houses out there. If you want I can't think of anything civil, so I'll just say, if you want your ass kissed, I mean, phone them, and they'll come over and tell you what a great tie you've got on, and they'll tell you all of the stuff that that you want to hear. And but you could go bankrupt listening to some of these things. I mean, they're just totally wrong. As far as I'm concerned, when I looked at the Tesla initially, the Tesla 3, I should tell you, we were asked to analyze a Tesla Model S. I went through it, I looked at it a little bit, and I told the customer that his money would be better spent doing other things. I said, there's nothing here that's going to be revolutionary, and I really don't think that this is something that that you should waste your money on. If you want to give it to somebody, and I recommend it a competitor. When the Model X came out, we looked at it, and the person that wanted us to do the analysis would not accept no. So what we did was we did an analysis on that car for that particular customer to look at how the car could be improved. And I'm not sure how many pages that we came up with, but I think it's something like around 2,000 pages on what could be done to the Model X to make it better. And then we got the Model 3 by accident. I don't know if you've heard that story, but in essence,
oh, tell us. Yeah,
we were asked by a consulting company and Audi to look at the Model 3, but we had to go and get one first. Well, we have a lot of agents and things like that that can get us cars in a hurry, and it was a very early build, and a guy had it, and so we bought it, and it didn't show up right away. It had been pulled back into the factory for some checkup or something. I'm not sure exactly what, some quality issue. And so consequently, we were a little late, and so Audi said, thanks for the memories, and they backed out. And so we were stuck with Model 3 shows up, and no customer. So we had done a couple of other cars in the past. We did a BMW i3, and that turned out to be a giant loser for us. People were telling us, because the thing was made out of carbon fiber and whatnot, they were saying, well, you got to go down to the chemistry and whatnot, and we did, and it cost $2.2 million. That's our
cost. $2 million to analyze the car.
That wasn't what we were going to sell it for.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
And because every piece was analyzed. I mean, we looked at everything on that vehicle from a manufacturing and design process, and it's all documented, but it's 57,000 pages. And I have no clue how big the appendix is, but we won't even print it because I don't think there's enough paper in the company to put that thing out. but it was huge, and it's very, very detailed. It's got all the adhesives, all the whatever. So when we got this thing, I was not terribly popular here with my folks. They were not real thrilled with the fact that I just bought another car that we didn't have anything to do, and they were even less enthusiastic when I said, well, we're going to tear it apart and we're going to do it on spec. And I was looking over my shoulder continuously. So anyway, we analyzed the thing, we took it apart, and actually there's a thing that we do called the FFQ, fit finish quality assessment. It's a non-intrusive look at a product as a way of a very very critical buyer. And when we first got the Tesla 3, oh my God, it had one of the worst scores ever.
So Sandy, before we kind of go on and talk about the Model 3, right after the break, I'm curious to see a comparison between the Model 3 that you received, that you were kind of mentioning, and the Model Y, which just came out. But we're going to throw it to break real quick. We're here with Sandy Monroe, Jason Calcanis, Johan Marino. We're talking about Monroe and Associates here on the Inside Transportation Podcast. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation podcast with Sandy Monroe, CEO and engineer of Monroe & Associates. I'm joined here with my co-host, Jason Calcanis. And we're talking about Tesla Model 3 versus the Tesla Model Y. Sandy was just telling us about the first time he analyzed the Model 3. Sandy, why don't you kind of elaborate on what you saw in that first Model 3 that you received in the shop?
Okay, so the first Model 3 we got, I likened it to an early Kia. We had never really seen anything where the gaps were so bad, and there was a lot of components that were either loose or ill-fitting, and it to me, from the first blush, it looked like a vehicle that had been shoved into the marketplace way too early. And when I got a chance to look under some of the shielding and whatnot that you have for noise and whatnot, I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw the body. So I had a very, very low opinion of it. Because the FFQ requires driving the car around a little bit, I got the chance to actually drive the car. So at one time I used to race cars. I had a Morgan Supersport. It's an English car that I'm not sure if it's still imported, but a lot of people in my era, in the 60s and 70s, would drive that car, and it was like on rails. This car, the Model 3, it may have been an ugly duckling on the outside, but from a driving capability standpoint, it was love at first acceleration. I really did like it a lot. Then we started taking it to pieces, and when we got rid of the things that offended me, like the fit and finish and whatnot, and we got the seats out, which kind of like everything was ordinary. When we pulled all that stuff out, then we got to what I really wanted to have a look at, which was the electronics and the battery and the suspension, and I was blown away. That I couldn't believe how part of the car could be so bad and the rest of the car be so so desirable. So the electric, like the powertrain, was fabulous. The batteries, the electrics, the electronics, the motors, the little gearbox, and everything was really impressive to me. And so I changed my mind quite a bit, and it's rightly so, because the outside, even Elon Musk said that maybe. Actually, I talked to Elon Musk, and he said that he had fired the guy that did the body. And I muttered something like, not soon enough. So so anyway, that was our very short conversation. Anyway.
And Elon's been pretty clear about this. Like, that was, he said they were in production hell. And you know, it's their first time automakers, right? I mean, when's the last time an automaker, you know, came into the market? It was, I guess, Fisker and Tesla. And then before that, I mean, I don't know the history of all the automotive brands, but it's very rare. DeLorean comes to mind. Before that, Jeep. I mean, and almost none of them survive. So for a first time out, I guess if you had to pick, have the core of the product be amazing and the facade be, you know, needing of tweaking, you would probably pick that as opposed to the reverse. How did it change with the Model Y?
Like night and day. I guess that would be the only way to describe it. The fit and finish on this car, I mean, there are a couple of things we don't like. They're still having problems with gaps and whatnot, but it's nothing compared to what they had before.
When you say gaps, what does that mean? Is that the space between the panels, like the door panels and the quarter panels and all that?
That's right. So we're pretty...
Why is that hard to get right? I mean, if you can build a 300-mile range car that can drive itself, why is the... I'm curious why the panels are so hard to get right. What does it take to even get that right? Isn't that just like... Are they put on by robots or are they put on by humans and they're just going too fast? Is it a speed error or is it a tooling error? What do you suspect was the challenge there?
To be quite frank, I'm not really sure. I've never been in the factories. Like when we do our costing, we assume that whomever's car that we're working on are using, you know, best practices. And like I say, if you want to look at best practices as far as electronics or the motor or anything, the suspension, their best practices are superb. The body is still, they just don't have it right. So there's a lot of reasons why things don't work out. Normally, it's because the body isn't put together correctly in the first place. The average guy will tell you we need five perfect holes, and that would be for the, you know, for the windshield and the four doors. That would be what I would be looking for. I want those five perfect holes. Everything else I can adjust. It doesn't always work out that way. So it could be suppliers. It could be the body shop where all these things are made and welded together. Could be a lot of things, but the gaps are a lot closer now, are closer to being consistent now than anything we've seen on the Tesla Model 3. And we have looked at a couple of Tesla Model 3s. They're doomed because there were just too many parts in the Model 3. You can't win. Where I would see, okay, I need three parts to do this job, they would have like 27. It was just like amazing. I've never seen anything designed like that before.
So Sandy, what are some distinguishing like characteristics or features that you find impressive on the Model Y versus the Model 3?
Yeah, the whole back end is very impressive. So I don't know if you got a chance to see the videos, but on Monroe Live we put out a lot of information on you know what we like, and quite frankly, I love the two big castings that they used to replace the, I don't know, probably 100 parts, and who knows how many fasteners that they had on the Model 3. I'm really impressed with that. I like a lot of that car. There's very little that I don't like. I think when it comes to what I would call dinosaur technology, so those are things like the body and whatnot. That technology has been around for a million years. I don't know why they can't get it as good as what other people can get it, but at the end of the day, it kind of pales in comparison to some of the other things that we've been looking at. We're very impressed with the Octo Valve, but we were impressed as well with the Super Bottle, which, I mean, they don't mean much to the driver because you'll never see them, but they mean a lot to an engineer.
How about that heat pump that Elon was talking about that would really increase the efficiency of the vehicle? Did you have a chance to kind of look at that as well?
Oh, yeah, that's part of the Octo-Valve system. That all is all in one giant cluster, as it were. That's a nicely executed kind of product. But since we've been doing the podcast, there's been a few people that have complained about the noise. Now, we didn't get a chance to really run that vehicle that we've torn to pieces. We haven't had a chance to run that too much. So I don't know anything about the noise that's coming, but the PTC heater that it replaced, the heat pump is going to be should be a lot more efficient, and that should give you better range. And because they've got a short circuit, which heats the heat pump up faster, I think people are going to be just as happy with the heat pump as they were with the PTC heaters.
That's awesome. Yeah. And hey, we're going to take a quick break here.
Yeah. And you know what I want to know? I'm going to tease, Johan. I want to tease what if there's any company that's come even close to what Tesla's accomplished in the EV space when we get back.
Hey, everybody, let me take a moment to thank Fenwick & West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's FENWICK.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation podcast. We're talking to Sandy Monroe, offering some amazing insights on Tesla, the construction of the Tesla Model Y, the construction of the Tesla Model 3, and how they're night and day. I mean, really good analysis here from Sandy. One question I had for Sandy was, do you see any ICE automakers doing anything better than Tesla? If so, like, what challenges do you think Tesla has in the manufacturing process? If you can offer any insight on that.
Actually, I can sum it up with one word, no. I don't know of any of the traditional automakers that have come up with anything that that can eclipse or even come to the same area as what Tesla's got going with the Model Y. I made a statement a while ago about saying, I think that was like 2 or 3 years ago, that Tesla has a 10-year advantage on everybody else.
10 years? I mean, that's like an eternity.
Here's what people don't really understand. Tesla is a lot more vertically integrated than other car companies. And Tesla has a... I've never really met Elon Musk, but I have talked to him a couple of times, and he was on another podcast, Tesla Third Row, and I was very quiet. I didn't want, I didn't want their show to go sideways. But anyway, the one thing I do like about Elon Musk is he's decisive. He makes it as he looks at something and he maybe compares 2 or 3 things and says, that's what I want. Boom, done. Get it going. I like that. That's what happens at Monroe & Associates. People bring me suggestions and we look at them and everybody makes their comments and whatnot. And then I say, take that one and let's go. Because speed is everything. I mean, if you look at it, you can't buy a second vac for $1 billion. why would I squander time? So I think that the two big things for Tesla is, one, they do a lot of vertical integration. They do a lot of innovation and whatnot that other people would shake in their boots at. And secondly, they've got a leader. I mean, can anybody on the phone or on anybody on this podcast, can anybody tell me, who's running BMW? Or who's running Jaguar, or who's running even Ford? Who's the guy in charge? Nobody knows. Okay, but everybody knows who Elon Musk is. So that's a leadership to me is much more important than what colors we're going to be having in the next vehicle.
That's really interesting, Sandy, that you mentioned that, because I feel like Tesla really emerging over the past decade has really brought back car culture into America. I don't know if you feel that way as well.
Well, they've certainly brought, there's a lot of people that are envious of Elon Musk and Tesla in general. I think that being envious is one thing, but pulling up your socks and getting going is certainly something else. But I see a lot of talking. There's lots of that. There's always lots of talking, but I don't see an awful lot of doing. And I kind of like I'm probably into doing more than talking. I'm not much of a talker.
Let me ask you a question, Sandy. I grew up as a muscle car kid from Brooklyn. My first car was a 73 Mustang Grande, the 351 Cleveland in it. It was just ridiculous car. And then I grew up and I always wanted to own a Corvette. I bought the Corvette C6. And then I started driving electric cars. And like you, the acceleration, the way it handled was so ridiculous that I never went back, right? And now for a decade, I've just bought four Teslas in 10 years. Yeah, for our family. So, I saw that Corvette C8 come out and I'm like, oh my God, that's gorgeous and beautiful. But I can't get excited about buying one that's not electric because I know the performance is just not going to be there. Can any of these car companies survive with the ICE engine and do you think young people want to even Gen X people can get excited about a gas powered car these days? Mm.
Well, I can tell you for sure that there's going to be cars with ICE engines and whatnot for quite some time. They're not going to disappear overnight. As far as performance characteristics are concerned, like I said before, I raced cars and they were quick. But I mean, when you sit your foot into an electric vehicle, you have all the torque and all the horsepower that you can possibly muster in that instant. I worked on the EV1 for General Motors. That was the fastest acceleration I'd ever been involved with ever in my whole life. When you put your foot into the EV1 before it was, the lawyers get a hold of it and they change things around. But when I first put my foot into an EV1 on the test track, I could not believe how fast that thing could go. I've never experienced acceleration like, except for a horse. If you get on a horse and it's a good horse, and you spank it and get it going, that moves real quick for the first few yards, and it's really difficult to hold on to. But with the EV1, I was positive it was faster than anything I'd ever been on at all. Period.
That's really interesting because you worked on the EV1. Why do you think that it took a while for electric vehicles to come back into the mainstream vehicle, conversation?
Well, General Motors had a guy named Bob Stempel that was in charge at the time of the EV1. He was the he was the president and CEO. And he thought it was a good idea, but he didn't last very long. Wall Street wanted somebody who was more financially focused and not as engineering focused. And so, I don't know, he wasn't in power very long. I think I said it one time. I said that he was in power for 10 minutes. But it was a very, very short tenure for him. That was tragic because without a sponsor, it was doomed. But that car, I mean, I worked on that car quite a bit, and we're in the book, the Who Killed the EV1 or something like that. But we were in the book as the nasty people who kept making everybody hit their targets. And we hit every target except for one. We couldn't hit the range. And the reason for that was because we had lead acid batteries and we had a 12 volt system. If we would have had a different system, a different power pack, a different battery system, it probably would have went well. But unfortunately, between the lack of range, I guess, and the lack of leadership, it went to another guy. It went to I've forgotten his name, Jack Smith. Jack Smith took over, and he's a Wall Street guy, and that's that. He knows how to appease the analysts, and that was the end of the game.
And that's really interesting that you mentioned that, because range is still one of those factors that consumers are really apprehensive about when it comes to electric vehicles. They have range anxiety. So it's interesting to see that this, you know, electric car that was one of the pioneers of the industry, you know, the challenges still kind of remain the same.
Is it really a challenge? I mean, this new Model 3 I have goes like 320 miles. I can almost get to like LA with just like one quick stop, or Tahoe with one quick stop, Truckee, maybe two if I want to, you know, do two smaller ones. It's just extraordinary with the 200, I think the 250 volt or 250 megawatt. I don't know what the rating is, but these new super fast chargers are bonkers how quickly it loads. It feels to me like range is, as a reason not to get one of these cars, is over.
I wouldn't put range anxiety even on the map anymore. I'm already getting people coming back saying that Tesla recommends that, or states, or the EPA states that the car has 317 miles of range. But really and truly, the average we've got so far from the people that have been sending me little notes and whatnot, they're running about 340 miles, and that's not range anxiety anymore. That's not a big deal. And then with a supercharger, have a coffee. It's no big deal. But when we start moving into what I consider the future, where we start using 800 volts instead of, you know, 240 or 400 volts, I mean, when you start pumping that kind of juice in, those batteries are going to hop to life in no time flat. And I truly believe that the Elon Musk was supposed to have a battery day, it didn't happen, probably for a lot of reasons. But I believe that he's going to come out with an announcement that'll basically eliminate all that stuff completely. I'm hoping he's going to say, well, we think we have a solid state battery, and when that comes along, all bets are off. All the people who are naysayers are going to be finding something else to sell short on.
Yeah, they bought that. Didn't they buy it? They bought a company, right? Maxwell or something that does this.
Yeah, Maxwell. Yeah, Maxwell. Yeah. Well, they claim to do it. I mean, we had a lady in here who filled our heads with sugar plums, and unfortunately, she had no idea that we had the depth that we do here at Monroe. One of our guys is... he's recognized worldwide as a battery expert, and I mean worldwide. I mean in China, it's Dr. Mark, and everybody knows who he is. Everybody who's anybody in the battery world. And this lady came in and blah blah blah, showed us some charts and whatnot. Mark asked three questions, and then she had to catch a bus or something. She wanted to leave. There's lots of people that do a lot of talking. I want to see the real deal. Show me the product. That's what I want. Show me your product. Let me fool around with it for a little while. And if somebody's got something like that, then okay, fine. When I'm done, let me rephrase that. When we at Monroe are done, I can guarantee you that if it's crap, you'll know about it instantly. And if it's for real, you'll know about that too. But right now, all I can tell you is that I haven't seen one. I've seen lots of stories, but I haven't seen anybody give me something that can really sink my teeth in.
So, Sandy, we actually received some questions from our Twitter followers. One of them being, and this is actually referencing the Cybertruck, which I'm sure you're aware of, an upcoming pickup truck from Tesla. Somebody asked, how will the Cybertruck steel exoskeleton have a crumple zone? And we might have to explain what crumple zone is, but I'm sure you have a better explanation of this, but basically the crumple zone is like a structural safety feature that's usually in the front of the vehicle that can absorb the impact of collisions. Am I correct?
There's crumple zones everywhere inside of a car. The car is made to withstand a direct hit by a car in any direction you can imagine, and that includes rollover. So in the front of the vehicle, there's a crush cans that will take care of a front-on, like a head-on collision. But more importantly is a small offset. The small offset is very, very difficult to achieve, and Tesla has some unique tricks that they've used in order to make that work. The Cybertruck, I'm sure, will have similar kinds of defensive maneuvers for keeping the passengers safe. And I have no question that they'll work just fine. Teslas are built. Let me rephrase that. Teslas are designed really, really well for crash.
And we actually received another question here from social media. Since Tesla is investing heavily on large stamping presses for the manufacturing of the main body components for the Model Y, how do you think this is going to affect future aesthetic changes when models refresh down the road?
Well, the presses they've got nothing to do with the tooling. You just change the tooling. So again, I was a toolmaker, and so the big giant presses, they give you the power, the tonnage that you need in order to bend the material and whatnot. But the dies and molds that are inside those presses are the things that change, and you can change them. It depends on how much of a change you want to make, but at the end of the day, you're probably looking at something that's going to hang around for 5 years. The one thing that I will tell you I'm impressed with is the die casting presses that they've purchased. The biggest biggest die casting presses in the world come from a plant in Italy, and I've had a chance to have a look at those things. Nobody has them like Tesla has them. They bought a bunch of them, and that's what I'm the most impressed in from a tooling standpoint.
What are your overall thoughts on the Cybertruck and its impact on the industry? Because it seems like nothing we've ever seen before, and I was at the launch, and I mean, the people were just losing their minds. Of course, these were Tesla, you know, super fans, but it does seem like they have an insane number of pre-orders for something that appeals typically to the truck segment. Or do you think that this is going to be something that people who don't use pickup trucks buy just for aesthetic purposes, or both even?
Okay. So, I do not own a Tesla. I own a Jeep Wrangler Rubicon, and I take it off road. I have winches and all the other things that you need in order to get out of bad situations. I'm very interested in the Cybertruck. We at Monroe and Associates, we have five tickets on that thing. We got them in the first few minutes of the announcement. So we're very interested in seeing what comes of that thing. As far as a pickup truck, I'm not interested in a pickup truck. I will never be. We have one here at Monroe, and we use it for picking things up and delivering them somewhere else. But that's not going to be the truck that I'm interested in having. I don't have a use for it. The Cybertruck, on the other hand, is good for me because I like going off-road. I like hunting, and that truck or that vehicle meets a lot of the criteria that I'd be looking for. So, to me, I think that it's a different category. It's not a pickup truck. It's a sports vehicle or sportsman's vehicle. I can put quads in it. I can put my bike, motorcycles in it. I can sleep in it if I'm going hunting. I can drive out to wherever I want to drive out to. I can get my sleeping bag in there, and with the heat pump and whatnot, I can stay warm. And then when it's time to go hunting, I can get out of there, get suited up, and get out of there, and then go and do what I need to do in order to get deer sausage. So there you go. Yeah.
But what impact do you think it'll have on the industry as well? I'm curious. Like this kind of bold design that has nothing to do with the design language of Tesla. And then I heard on that Third Row podcast that Elon was like, listen, I just want to make things that are awesome. I really don't care about like some ongoing design language of the Tesla brand. I'm just going to make things that are awesome. What do you think the impact will have? Because we were talking last week on the show, Johan, about that Subaru that looks really modern, like something from Blade Runner or RoboCop. And I was like, what's the chances of that thing ever comes out? And you're like, 50-50 or something. Sandy, do you think that we're going to see Tesla, the same impact they had on self-driving, using batteries? Maybe this will have an impact on people getting, you know, really bold designs to market quicker or no?
I don't think you're going to see 100 people coming out with a Cybertruck. Although lots of people do like to be, second but better dressed. I think that it's unique. It's going to be like a Jeep Wrangler. Jeep Wrangler has been around for a long time. Other people have tried to get into that market, failed, and then they get back out again. I don't think that anybody is going to stick their toe into that water. But I will tell you one thing. When we were working with, we were working for BMW to try and shine up Land Rover so that they could sell it. And they had the chassis there, it's a rolling chassis. So it's like, it's just like a H-beams and suspension and an engine and whatnot. I wanted to ship those to the United States and I wanted to make a Judge Dredd vehicle. I thought that would be fabulous, okay? So I talked
to... You could call it the Dreadnought.
Yeah, exactly, the Dreadnought. Exactly right. And that's exactly what I wanted. And I talked to some investors here, and they said that they would bankroll me on it. And unfortunately, I couldn't talk the BMW people into it because they said, that's not your job. We don't want this to... to go sideways. We're trying to sell this thing. Just fix them up and get us out of here. And that's kind of like what wound up happening. But I personally like the angles. I'm a sharp angle kind of guy. It's a very masculine look. I think that for some, it's a polarizing design. Either you're going to have people that love it or hate it. And that's all. There's no in between. None.
And that's the point. That's the point, is to make a bold design decision. Like, when you make something to appeal to everybody, that's when you get like the Ford Taurus or something.
No, you get a Toyota Camry.
Even better. Yeah.
So
what do you think of those new Defenders? You know, the new Defender that came out. they kind of like took the really beautiful old one and they kind of smoothed it out a little bit. I'm kind of torn.
I don't like it, but I was a big fan of the Defender before. So there you go. I will tell you, I think that there's going to be a market for the Cybertruck, and it is not going to be the guy who buys an F-150. Guy that buys an F-150 is doing it for a whole bunch of other reasons. Maybe he's got a construction site. Maybe he hauls plywood every once in a while. Maybe he wants to, have something suitable for bringing home mulch or something. Who knows? But that's not what... if I bought one of those vehicles, it definitely wouldn't be so I could haul plywood. That would be the last thing on my mind if I got one. I think that the guy that needs an F-150 is a totally different kind of person than the one who's going to be buying a Cybertruck.
So Sandy, kind of wrapping up about Tesla, and this is probably going to be about the Model Y, but is there any improvements that you see that are kind of needed for the Model Y before it goes out into mass production? Did you notice anything that needs to be improved still on the vehicle? I remember seeing some people talk about the wiring within the vehicle. I don't know if you can kind of elaborate on that.
The wiring's fabulous. I have no problems with the wiring. I was disappointed because they said that they were going to reduce the wiring by a significant amount by basically cutting it in half, and I didn't see that. So I wasn't happy. Well, it is what it is. But the wire bundles and whatnot, they're all fine. Everything's the right gauges and whatnot. It's fine. Now, as far as improvements, yes. Last time when we did the analysis on the Tesla Model 3, we found 250 things that they needed to improve. And we made money on selling the reports. And so we sent that Excel spreadsheet off to Tesla. I can't remember who the person was, but anyway, when we get done with this, we'll give them the recommendations that we think they can use to improve the vehicle. It seems fair to me that if we're making money off of their design and their engineering and their product, why shouldn't we share what we think could help it out down the road? It's what we do for a living with everybody else. I mean, if we have a private customer, that's what we do. We tear their vehicle apart, scrutinize it, analyze it, cost it, and then tell them how they can improve it. That is our livelihood. That's what we do. That's why we tear so many cars apart. We don't sell a whole bunch of spec vehicles like the Tesla or the BMW or the Bolt or what have you. We work with customers that want their cars to be less cost and better quality. And that's kind of like what we do.
That's great. And I just want to, let everybody know that's listening to the podcast, if they want to see some of your videos, they're on your website. I believe that website is leandesign.com, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Monroe Live is where the podcast is, or the video casting. But Monroe and Associates has all the rest of this stuff.
Just type his name, Sandy Monroe, into YouTube and watch these like really long 2-hour. I put your videos on when I'm working and I just like watch you like talk about these cars in like a level of detail I've never seen before. I'm curious, as we are kind of wrapping up here, what your thought, and thanks for giving us the hour. It was really generous of you. What are your thoughts on self-driving? I don't know if you guys specifically study that, or you have a practice for that, or if you're going to launch a practice to study that specifically, but it seems like there is a big debate in the industry of when, full self-driving, nobody sitting in the, I guess it's level 4 or level 5, nobody sitting in the driver's seat, nobody having to pay attention is going to be here. In your estimation, in an American city, let's take New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, a major American city, when would a major American city see self-driving cars with no steering wheel in them, nobody needing to take over? Would it be greater or less than 10 years?
Yeah.
If you had to bet your Jeep Wrangler, your Jeep Rubicon on it.
Well, I bet my Jeep Rubicon on it. It's pretty beat up.
Let's make it real.
I will tell you, I think it's going to be less than 10 years. And the reason for that is because we designed an airplane called the Paradigm. And the paradigm, you told it where you wanted to go. It seated five people. 2008 was a bad year for us. We had a sponsor that was going to shell $500 million into that airplane. And unfortunately, it was Lehman Brothers. People can't believe that's true, but I have all the documentation. So I saw the ability to make an airplane which would get you from wherever you were to wherever you wanted to go, and you didn't need a pilot. To me, it's just a math problem here with self-driving vehicles. Airplanes take off and land all by themselves all day long, and they figure out how to get to where they need to get to all by themselves. Pilots are there. They don't really do a heck of a lot anymore. It's not like they're busy all the time. The same thing is going to be true with cars. I hear lots of professors and people like that yammering on about how things are this way or that way, but at the end of the day, to me, it'll be in my lifetime, and I'm old, so I don't even buy I don't even buy green bananas anymore. I think seriously, it'll be less than 10 years. Yes.
Wow. What do you think about the robotaxi project?
I don't know enough about robotaxis to get involved in that. Again, if we can get to self-driving vehicles or robotaxi, why do I need the robo? All I'll do is there'll be a car sitting there. I'll just get in and say, take me home, and that'll be the end of that. So,
great insights from Sandy Monroe. He's the Chief Executive Officer and Engineer for Monroe & Associates. Thank you so much for joining us, Sandy. That was a great, great, great time.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much for having me, Joanne.
All right, Jason, I think that's a wrap.
I think that's a wrap. What an episode. What a great first guest. Tom, we hit it out of the park with that one.
I know. So thanks, everyone, for listening to the Inside Transportation Podcast. We'll be back next week. Take care, and we'll see you soon.